Section 2, The Home Front, An American Story. Even as he began to address the crowd of about 1,200 people, Eugene Debs suspected he was heading for trouble with the authorities. The 62-year-old socialist leader had traveled to Canton, Ohio on June 16, 1918, to speak at the state's convention of the Socialist Party. The time had come, Debs decided, to condemn American participation in World War I. "I realize that in speaking to you this afternoon," he told the crowd, "there are certain limitations placed upon the right of free speech. I must be exceedingly careful, prudent as to what I say, and even more careful as to how I say it." Laughter came from the crowd, and then applause. "But I am not," Debs continued, "going to say anything that I do not think. I would rather 1,000 times be a free soul in jail than to be a coward in the streets." When the transcript of Debs' speech arrived at the federal office in Cleveland, a grand jury indicted him for violating the newly passed Espionage Act. The socialist leader was arrested and imprisoned. Said Debs, "I had a hunch that speech was likely to settle the matter." Adapted from Echoes of Distant Thunder. Building up the military. When the United States declared war against Germany in April 1917, progressives controlled the federal government. They did not abandon their ideas simply because a war had begun. Instead, they applied progressive ideas to fighting the war. Selective Service. When the United States entered the war in 1917, the Army and National Guard together had slightly more than 300,000 troops. Although many men volunteered after the war was declared, many felt more soldiers needed to be drafted. Many progressives believed that conscription, forced military service, was a violation of democratic and republican principles. Realizing a draft was necessary, however, Congress, with Wilson's support, created a new conscription system called Selective Service. Instead of having the military run the draft from Washington, D.C., the Selective Service Act of 1917 required all men between 21 and 30 to register for the draft. A lottery randomly determined the order they were called before a local draft board in charge of selecting or exempting people from military service. The thousands of local boards were at the heart of the system. The members of the draft boards were civilians from local communities. Progressives believed local people, understanding community needs, would know which men to draft. Eventually, about 2.8 million Americans were drafted. Approximately 2 million others volunteered for military service. African Americans in the War. Of the nearly 400,000 African Americans who were drafted, about 42,000 served overseas as combat troops. African American soldiers encountered discrimination and prejudice in the Army, where they served in racially segregated units, almost always under the supervision of white officers. Despite these challenges, many African American soldiers fought with distinction in the war. For example, the African American 92nd and 93rd Infantry Divisions fought in bitter battles along the Western Front. Many of them won praise from both the French commander, Marshal Henri Pétain, and the United States commander, General John Pershing. The entire 369th Infantry Division won the highly prized French decoration, the Croix de Guerre, War Cross, for gallantry in combat. Women in the military. World War I was the first war in which women officially served in the armed forces, although only in non-combat positions. Women nurses had served in both the Army and Navy since the early 1900s, but as auxiliaries. Nurses were not assigned ranks, and the women were not technically enlisted in the Army or Navy. As the military prepared for war in 1917, it faced a severe shortage of clerical workers because so many men were assigned to active duty. Early in 1917, the Navy authorized the enlistment of women to meet its clerical needs. The women wore a standard uniform and were assigned the rank of yeoman. By the end of the war, over 11,000 women had served in the Navy. Although most performed clerical duties, others served as radio operators, electricians, pharmacists, photographers, chemists, and torpedo assemblers. Unlike the Navy, the Army refused to enlist women. Instead, it began hiring women as temporary employees to fill clerical jobs. The only women to actually serve in the Army were in the Army Nursing Corps. Army nurses were the only women in the military to be sent overseas during the war. Over 20,000 nurses served in the Army during the war, including more than 10,000 overseas. Reading check. Describing. How did Congress ensure that the United States would have enough troops to serve in World War I? Organizing industry. The progressive emphasis on careful planning and scientific management shaped the federal government's approach to mobilizing the American war economy. To efficiently manage the relationship between the federal government and private companies, Congress created special boards to coordinate mobilization of the economy. Instead of having the government control the economy, these boards emphasized cooperation between big business and government. Business executives, professional managers, and government representatives staffed the boards. Their goal was to ensure the most efficient use of national resources to further the war effort. The War Industries Board. One of the first agencies established was the War Industries Board, or WIB. Created in July 1917, the WIB's job was to coordinate the production of war materials. At first, President Wilson was reluctant to give the WIB much authority over the economy, but by March 1918, he decided industrial production needed better coordination. The WIB was reorganized, and Bernard Baruch was appointed to run it. Under this Wall Street stockbroker's supervision, the WIB told manufacturers what they could and could not produce. It controlled the flow of raw materials, ordered the construction of new factories, and occasionally, with the president's approval, set prices. Food and fuel. Perhaps the most successful government agency was the Food Administration, run by Herbert Hoover. This agency was responsible for increasing food production while reducing civilian consumption. Instead of using rationing, Hoover encouraged Americans to save food on their own. Using the slogan, "Food will win the war, don't waste it," the Food Administration encouraged families to Hooverize by serving just enough and by having wheatless Mondays, meatless Tuesdays, and porkless Thursdays. Hoover also encouraged citizens to plant victory gardens to raise their own vegetables, leaving more for the troops. While Hoover managed food production, the Fuel Administration, run by Harry Garfield, tried to manage the nation's use of coal and oil. To conserve energy, Garfield introduced daylight savings time and shortened work weeks for factories that did not make war materials. He also encouraged Americans to observe heatless Mondays. Paying for the war. By the end of World War I, the United States was spending about $44 million a day, leading to a total expenditure of about $32 billion for the entire conflict. To fund the war effort, Congress raised income tax rates. Congress also placed new taxes on corporate profits and an extra tax on the profits of arms factories. Taxes, however, could not cover the entire cost of the war. To raise the money it needed, the government borrowed more than $20 billion from the American people by selling Liberty Bonds and Victory Bonds. By buying the bonds, Americans were loaning the government money. The government agreed to repay the money with interest in a specified number of years. Posters, rallies, and Liberty Loan sermons encouraged people to buy the bonds as an act of patriotism. Reading check. Summarizing. What federal agencies helped control American industries during the war? Mobilizing the workforce. While the WIB and other agencies tried to build cooperation between the government and business, officials knew that they also needed workers to cooperate if mobilization was to succeed. To prevent strikes from disrupting the war effort, the government established the National War Labor Board, or NWLB, in April 1918. Chaired by William Howard Taft and Frank Walsh, a prominent labor attorney, the NWLB attempted to mediate labor disputes that might otherwise lead to strikes. the NWLB frequently pressured industry to grant important concessions to workers, including wage increases, an 8-hour workday, and the right of unions to organize and bargain collectively. In exchange, labor leaders agreed not to disrupt war production with strikes or other disturbances. As a result, membership in unions increased by more than 1.5 million between 1917 and 1919. Women support industry. The war increased work opportunities for women who filled industrial jobs vacated by men serving in the military. These included factory and manufacturing jobs and various positions in the shipping and railroad industries. War-generated changes in female employment, however, were not permanent. After the war, when the servicemen returned home, most women returned to their previous jobs or stopped working. The Great Migration begins. With the flow of immigrants from Europe cut off and large numbers of white workers being drafted, the war also opened new doors for African Americans. Wartime job openings and high wages drew thousands of African Americans to factories producing war materials. Encouraged by recruiting agents promising high wages and plentiful work, between 300,000 and 500,000 African Americans left the South to settle in northern cities. This became known as the Great Migration. This massive population movement altered the racial makeup of such cities as Chicago, New York, Cleveland, and Detroit. Mexican Americans head north. African Americans were not the only group to migrate north during the war. Continuing political turmoil in Mexico and the wartime labor shortage in the United States convinced many Mexicans to head north. Between 1917 and 1920, over 100,000 Mexicans migrated into Texas, Arizona, California, and New Mexico, providing labor for the farmers and ranchers of the Southwest. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of Mexican Americans headed north to Chicago, St. Louis, Omaha, and other cities to take wartime factory jobs. Many Mexican Americans faced hostility and discrimination when they arrived in American cities. Like other immigrants before them, they tended to settle in their own separate neighborhoods, called barrios, where they could support each other. Reading check. Evaluating. How permanent were women's advances in the wartime workplace? Ensuring public support. Progressives in the government did not think coordinating business and labor was enough to ensure the success of the war effort. They also believed that the government should take steps to shape public opinion and build support for the war. Selling the war. A new government agency, the Committee on Public Information, had the task of selling the war to the American people. The head of the CPI was journalist George Creel, who recruited advertising executives, commercial artists, authors, songwriters, entertainers, public speakers, and motion picture companies to help sway public opinion in favor of the war. The CPI distributed pamphlets and arranged for thousands of short patriotic talks called 4-minute speeches to be delivered at movie theaters and public halls and gathering places. The 4-Minute Men urged audiences to support the war in various ways, from buying war bonds to reporting draft dodgers to the proper authorities. Civil liberties curtailed. In addition to using propaganda and persuasion, the government also passed legislation to fight anti-war activities or enemies at home. Espionage, or spying to acquire secret government information, was addressed in the Espionage Act of 1917, which established penalties and prison terms for anyone who gave aid to the enemy. This act also penalized disloyalty, giving false reports, or otherwise interfering with the war effort. The post office even hired college professors to translate foreign periodicals to find out if they contained anti-war messages. The Sedition Act of 1918 expanded the meaning of the Espionage Act to make illegal any public expression of opposition to the war. In practice, it allowed officials to prosecute anyone who criticized the president or the government. Combined, these laws generated over 1,500 prosecutions and 1,000 convictions. A climate of suspicion. The fear of spies and emphasis on patriotism quickly led to the mistreatment and persecution of German Americans. To avoid German-sounding names, advertisers began to call sauerkraut Liberty Cabbage and hamburger Salisbury Steak. Many schools dropped German language classes from their curricula, and orchestras stopped performing the music of Beethoven, Schubert, Wagner, and other German composers. Anti-German feeling sometimes led to violence. Some citizens beat neighbors who were German-born. In Collinsville, Illinois, a mob lynched a German-born man whom they suspected of disloyalty. German Americans were not the only ones under suspicion. Mobs attacked labor activists, socialists, and pacifists. Newspaper ads urged Americans to monitor the activities of their fellow citizens. Americans even formed private organizations, such as the American Protective League and the Boy Spies of America, to spy on neighbors and co-workers. Secretary of War Newton Baker expressed concern about the growing intolerance. There was a growing frenzy of suspicion and hostility toward disloyalty. I am afraid we are going to have a good many instances of people roughly treated on very slight evidence of disloyalty. Already a number of men and some women have been tarred and feathered, and a portion of the press is urging with great vehemence more strenuous efforts at detection and punishment. Quoted in Echoes of Distant Thunder, the Supreme Court limits free speech. Despite protests against the government's tactics, however, the courts generally upheld the principle behind them. Although the First Amendment specifically states that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, the Supreme Court decided otherwise, departing from a strict literal interpretation of the Constitution. In the landmark case of Schenck versus the United States, 1919, the Supreme Court ruled that an individual's freedom of speech could be curbed when the words uttered constitute a clear and present danger. The court used as an example someone yelling fire in a crowded theater as a situation in which freedom of speech would be superseded by the theater-goer's right to safety. The court's majority opinion stated, when a nation is at war, many things that might be said in times of peace are such a hindrance to its effort that their utterance will not be endured so long as soldiers fight. Reading check. Explaining. Why did Congress pass the Espionage Act in 1917? Time Notebook. A War to End All Wars. 1914 to 1918. World War First. Human ingenuity goes to work in the service of war. Aerial combat, 1914. War takes to the air. Two Allied aircraft chase two German planes across Britain. Gas attacks, 1915. The German High Command admits to using chlorine gas bombs and shells on the field of combat. Deadly mustard gas is used in 1917. Gas masks, issued to Allied soldiers in 1915. Donkey's ears. A new trench periscope enables soldiers to observe the battleground from the relative safety of a trench without risking sniper fire. Big Bertha. Enormous howitzer gun bombards Paris. Big Bertha, named after the wife of its manufacturer, is thought to be located nearly 63 miles behind German lines. Moving at night on railroad tracks, the gun is difficult for the Allies to locate. Color My World. Some bright spots in a dark decade. Color newspaper supplements, 1914. 3D films, 1915. Nail polish, 1916. Three-color traffic lights, 1918. Color photography introduced by Eastman Kodak, 1914. Verbatim. My message was one of death for young men. How odd to applaud that. Woodrow Wilson, on returning to the White House after asking Congress for a declaration of war, 1917. Food is ammunition. Don't waste it. Poster from U.S. Food Administration, administered by Herbert Hoover. I have a hard time getting over this war. My old world died. Ray Stannard Baker, journalist. Let us, while this war lasts, forget our special grievances, and close our ranks, shoulder to shoulder, with our own white fellow citizens and the allied nations that are fighting for democracy. W.E.B. Du Bois, African American Scholar and Leader, 1918. America has at one bound become a world power in a sense she never was before. British Prime Minister David Lloyd George on the U.S. entry into World War I, 1917. In the camps, I saw barrels mounted on sticks, which zealous captains were endeavoring to teach their men how to ride a horse. Theodore Roosevelt on touring U.S. military training facilities, 1917. The war was over, and it seemed as if everything in the world were possible, and everything was new, and that peace was going to be all we dreamed about. Florence Harriman, Red Cross volunteer in Paris on Armistice Day, 1918. How to make a doughboy. Take one American infantryman. 1. Arm with 107 pieces of fighting equipment, including rifle, rifle cartridges, cartridge belt, steel helmet, clubs, knives, gas mask, wire cutters, trench tool, bayonet and scabbard, grenades. 2. Add 50 articles of clothing, including 3 wool blankets and a bed sack. 3. Equip with eating utensils and 11 cooking implements. 4. Train well. Total cost $156.30, not including training and transportation to Europe. Milestones. Repatriated April 10, 1917. Vladimir Ilyich Lenin to Russia after an 11-year absence. The leader of the leftist Bolshevik Party hopes to reorganize his revolutionary group. Shot down and killed April 22, 1918. The Red Baron. Manfred von Richthofen, Germany's ace pilot. Von Richthofen destroyed more than 80 Allied aircraft. On hearing of the Red Baron's death, English fighter pilot Edward Mannix said, "I hope he roasted all the way down." Elected March 4, 1917, Jeanette Rankin of Montana to the U.S. Congress. The first woman congressional representative explained her victory by saying that women got the vote in Montana because the spirit of pioneer days was still alive. Executed October 15, 1917. Mata Hari in France for espionage. The famous Dutch dancer was sentenced to death for spying for the Germans. Numbers, 1915. $1,040. Average annual income for workers in finance, insurance, and real estate. $687. Average income for industrial workers. Higher for union workers, lower for non-union workers. $510. Average income for retail trade workers. $355. Average income for farm laborers. $342. Average income for domestic servants. $328. Average income for public school teachers. $11.95. Cost of a bicycle. $1.15. Cost of a baseball. $1. Average cost of a hotel room. 39 cents. Cost of 1 dozen eggs. 5 cents. Cost of a glass of cola. 7 cents. Cost of a large roll of toilet paper.